Thank you. Now I'm really nervous. Okay. My name is Sandy and I'm an addict.
Hey, Sandy.
The speaker statement, the NA member chosen to speak at this meeting needs to be someone who is working and living the NA program of recovery, which are the 12 steps and the 12 traditions. In areas where there is not an abundance of NA members with substantial clean time or experience with the 12 steps and 12 traditions, there is the possibility that a group inexperienced in Narcotics Anonymous may misunderstand NA traditions and invite speakers from outside the NA fellowship. There are several ways to avoid this situation. Our basic text, for instance, reminds us that NA members from other areas are willing to drive long distances to support new groups. The speaker helps fulfill the group's primary purpose, carrying the message of recovery to the addict who still suffers. When speaking at an NA meeting, we should be careful to deliver a clear message of recovery by identifying ourselves as addicts recovering from the disease of addiction. It is not necessary to dwell excessively on our active addiction or war stories, because we all know what it is like, what it was like to use. We came to Narcotics Anonymous to stop using, and we are here to share our experience, strength, hope of recovery. Again, my name is Sandy, and I'm an addict.
Hey, Sandy.
Well, I'm still nervous, right? But the only thing, thank you, the only thing I can do is to share my strength, my hope, and my experience. And my topic is what color is clean. And when I got the call and the letter, I was like, oh, my God, what am I supposed to do with this? What color is clean? And I talked to my sponsor. Well, she didn't give me a lot of help with it. She just said, well, you know, are you on a pink cloud? I said, no. So she said, well. And I talked to some people in my network, and I got a lot of different opinions about that. But, you know, I like to talk from my gut, because, see, if I try to do anything other than, you know, then I don't deliver a message of hope. I'm not sharing my experience, so I'm going to talk from my gut. Let me tell you about me. First of all, I'm a dope fiend. I like shooting dope. If I could shoot some dope today, right now, I would, you know, if I could do that and not have back the pain and the misery and the hopelessness that I felt. I was in a lot of pain, y'all. I shot dope, and I smoked coke, too. I became a chemist because all I did not, what happened is I liked to speedball, so I couldn't find coke. So in powder form, I would get the rock, and I learned how to break that down into liquid form to put on my dope. And so all I didn't shoot, I would smoke. And this became a real vicious circle. I was past the point of having fun when I was getting high. It had became a job, you know. It was a job, and I didn't have no sick leave. I couldn't call in. you know, and I can remember in the beginning, you know, because I did everything I needed to do to get what I needed. And I stayed on the corner. I wouldn't go home. I slept in abandoned cars. I slept in abandoned buildings. I did whatever. You know, I was scared I was going to miss something. And towards the end, I didn't want my family to see me like that. So I started hiding, you know. And the shame and the guilt, you know, was just so overwhelming. And I really felt like I was going to die a dope fiend. I always said I never stole from my family and my mother, you know, but I did. I stole their peace of mind and their sleep at night. I can remember every time there was a female that had been found dead, somebody in my family had to go to the morgue to make sure it wasn't me. I put my family through a lot. I have 3 kids. Even today, I still deal with where to draw the line, because when I was using, I missed a lot in their life. I wasn't there for them. I had a daughter. My daughter's my oldest. And then I have a son. He's my youngest. I have two boys and a girl. And dealing with them today, I can see the damage that I've done in their lives. But I just know that today I can be there for them. And sometimes, you know, that guilt makes me do a little more than I should do, and I don't know where to draw the line. And I'd have to keep talking to my sponsor and people in my network about that. But let me back up. When at the end of my story, I'm not going to tell y'all about getting high because we already know how to do that. At the end of my story, I was in so much pain. I was hopeless. I knew I wanted to stop, but I just didn't know how. I used to stand outside in the morning watching people go to work because I never went to bed. And I used to look at them. I mean, how the hell do they go on a job and work all day, you know, without getting high? With, you know, how do they do that? And somewhere in the back of my mind, I remember I used to do that. But I just could not imagine my life without a mind-altering drug. You know, I just could not imagine going through a single day without being high. You know, I just could not, I couldn't conceive it. And like I said, in the beginning, it was a lot of fun. But at the end of my story, y'all, I was in so much pain. It wasn't fun. I was real tired of going out there tricking with these men. You know, having them talk to me any kind of way or treat me any kind of way. I can remember one time I was coming down the street. I had just coughed, and I had the stuff in my sock because I was a impatient dope fiend. I couldn't buy my stuff and go back to the house. I wanted to get it and go find, around a corner somewhere and do it real quick. I ain't had time to go home. Anyway, I had been up in one of them oil joints, and I left, and I had a whole lot of stuff in my sock, a 10-pack and some rocks and my works and my cooker, because I carried all of that, you know, because I needed to be able to do what I wanted to do. So I was coming up the street. It was about 12 o'clock on a you know, it was a summer night, and I can remember somebody grabbed me from behind, and my feet were off the ground. When I came through, I was laid in between some buildings. And to show you how sick I was, I didn't, you know, I could feel the blood in my face, but I reached for my sock to see if my dope was still there. You know, I got up, the ambulance came because some people had called the ambulance. They cleaned me up and everything, and I went back to the corner to trick again before I went home because I need to have enough money. You know, now I got a sock full of dope, but I needed to have enough money for the next day. And I'm telling y'all, I was just real tired. I was so, so tired. I can't tell you how many times I went to jail. I just don't remember, you know, but I'm sure my file is, like, really, really thick. And I remember sitting in the back of the bullpen looking at all the graffiti on the wall, the names and stuff like that, which I probably knew by heart. And I was just tired, and at that time, I just was like, God, help me, you know, help me. And when I went before the judge, I was just so sure he was going to say, step her back. That's all they ever said to me, you know, step her back. You know, so this time I asked him for help, and he placed me in the Star Hider program. And, you know, being the real smart and intelligent dope fiend that I was, I beat them for a while. You know, I used to switch my urine and stuff, and but see, what happened was when I prayed that prayer, the process started without my permission. They caught me, and I got sanctioned. So I had to go to the jail and lay down for 3 days. And I got out, and I gave up a dirty urine again. And this time when I went to the jail, it wasn't for 3 days, although I thought it was. But they didn't let me out in the 3 days. So I was mad at my PO, and you know, I thought everybody was against me. I couldn't trust nobody. And I was just real angry. But what happened was one day they parked my gate, told me to bag my stuff up, and I went down to R&D, and Second Genesis was waiting for me. I went to Second Genesis in Crownsville. When I got there, I really, really just felt like I was just going to, you know, stay out of trouble. You know, just get through it and come on out. While I was there, my mother got sick. And I began to hear some things. I was in a meeting H and I had brought in, and what they said was, I heard this guy share. He said, if you try this thing for 90 days and you're not satisfied, you can have back all your pain and your misery. And see, that might not mean anything to you, but a person like me that was in so much pain, you know, that was just like everything. I left Second Genesis and I went to Phoenix House in Arlington, Virginia, reentry. While I was there, my mother passed. Everything that I had heard up to that point, I just heard it. I didn't really know what to do with it. And I remember them telling me that, you know, we're going to give you a tool belt and some tools, and you put those tools in the tool belt, and you have this to use. And see, that didn't make sense to me. You know, all the shit they were saying, I didn't understand none of it, you know. And I don't know if I really cared about whether I understood it or not. But when I lost my mother, that changed everything. I began to tell people I was hurt, I was in pain, and I needed help. And that was new for me because I didn't want to tell you nothing. You know, I just didn't want people in my business. I'll go back to my business in a minute. I went into an Oxford House after my mother died. My mother had been dead, I think, two weeks, because I put off going into the Oxford House to bury my mom. And I went into that Oxford House, y'all, and I was still in pain. I didn't know anything about recovery. I didn't know that you people met, you know, and talked about your shit. I just didn't know. You know, I didn't know. So when I got there, I knew that I didn't want to live like I used to live, but I didn't know how to live clean. The women in the house, they gave me a lot of help. And if any of you all ever been in an Oxford House, you know exactly what I'm talking about. When I got there, I took me with me. That's mentality, you know, the street mentality, thinking that I was, one more time, going to be in charge and run something. And they wasn't having it. They wasn't impressed with my shit. You know, I wanted to go in there and fight and tell them what I wasn't going to do. They was like, okay, they just write a contract, put me on a contract, or fine me. You know, and they kept, you know, but they told me, we hit you in your pocket enough, you'll get it. You know, I stayed in trouble. You know, I just stayed in trouble. And I don't know how I got through it, but just one day at a time, just taking suggestions that people gave me. I used to get so mad at those women in the house, I'd go in the room and slam my door so hard the whole house would shake. But when I got in my room and I was by myself, I processed that information, you know. And it's hard for people to tell you about your behavior, you know, and your nasty-ass attitude, you know. But I would go in my room and I would process that information. I had a job that, you know, I hated, you know, that therapeutic job where you make the, like, minimum wage. That shit was like, what? I think I was making $7.35 an hour as a front desk clerk. And the people would come in the hotel for me to check them in, and I'd be looking at them like, what? You know, but it's my job to check them in, just show you how I'm still, you know, not working on shit. I wouldn't. You know, I would have an attitude with them because they wanted me to check them in the hotel because they thought that was my job, which it was, but I just was, you know. I ain't understand that shit. And another time, it was a fire in the hotel, y'all. I'm serious. It was a fire in the hotel. And the alarm and everything was going off. So I went outside and I waited for the fire department. So when they got there, they was like, did you vacate the hotel? I was like, no, they heard the alarm like I did. You know, that's just where I was at. That's the type of attitude I had. I was real selfish and self-centered. But to make a long story short, you know, I lost that job. I got fired. I don't know why. I got fired, and I had to sit still with me. And I went back to school. It was a real hard time for me. I remember my family taking care of me, paying my rent and stuff, but I wouldn't ask them for food, right, because, you know, pride, right? And sometimes my groceries list would consist of a bag of potatoes, a box of grits, and some butter. You know, that's what I lived off of for about a year. But just doing this thing just one day at a time and listening to suggestions that were given to me and the help of you people in this room, my life just totally changed. I remember crying, thinking, you know, I could see the other women in the house moving out and getting better jobs. And I was like, when is it going to be my turn? You know, I would just be so discouraged. And what was told to me, it was okay for me to be discouraged, but don't give up, Sandy. Just don't give up. Hold on, you know. And that's what I did just for today. You know, took on a whole new meaning for me. I got a better job, and I got a job as a life skills instructor, and I thought that was really funny because I didn't know shit about living life, let alone instructing someone else, right? So, but things just began to happen in my life. I eventually moved out of the Oxford House. I got my own place, and I'm a mother today. I'm a sister. I'm a meemaw. Yeah, I'm a meemaw. And I just live life on life terms. I want to go back to my topic, we'll call it clean. I thought about it a lot. And, you know, I know some people that were speaking in the convention, they wrote down, they took notes. And, you know, I don't know, that's just not for me. But what I did for me, I'm going to tell you what clean is to me. It's clear. What color is clean? It's clear. Because I'm clear about what I need to do, you know, in this process of recovery. You know, I got to do something for somebody every day, no strings attached. I got to talk to my sponsor, work the steps, you know, and don't use. You know, just don't use. Life is good today, you know, and what I want to say to the newcomer, just give yourself a chance. You know, I went through the whole thing, you know, the POs, the Oxford houses, the restrictions, all that stuff, you know, and I came through it. You know, a dope fiend like me that thought she knew everything, I came through it all. And, you know, today I just do what they tell me to do. You know, I work the steps. I remember talking about the third step. I was like, whoo, I'm so glad to finally turn it over, you know, but did I really turn it over? Because sometimes I still want to be in charge. You know, I have to work on my mouth, the things that I say out of my mouth, because once you say it, you know, you've done the damage. I don't care. You can go back and say that you're sorry, but you've already done it. And what I want to do, I want to learn how to talk to people like I want people to talk to me. You know, today I'm real cautious about hurting another suffering addict, just another human being. You know, if I can get through the day and don't hurt nobody, that's a good day for me. You know, I'd want to think that I practice these principles in all of my affairs, but do I really? You know, do I really? You know, and that's where I'm at right now. I just love the program. It has been so good to me. You know, I have a God of my understanding. If you don't have one, you'll get one. You know, but until then, just have G-O-D, good orderly direction. I can't say enough about the changes in my life, you know, just being a responsible individual today, coming to the convention, you know, it's been real good. Like I said, the color of clean for me is clear. I'm just real clear about what I need to do. I don't have all the answers, you know. I just work this thing one day at a time. Again, I'm Sandy, and I'm an addict, and thank you for letting me share.